segment, you heard Gordo visiting with my father. I sat down with Gordo's father this week. Once a year, my wife and I will have dinner with Gordo's father, and sometimes his mother joins us.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. That sounds like a drug deal happening.
So it's our annual get-together, and this year, before we went out to eat, I put Gordo's father through this very, very painful interview. So here I am sitting down with the Right Reverend Dr. Jim Keith.
Was there anything at all about Gordon as a small child or as an adolescent that ever led you to believe that he would end up carving out a successful career in sports talk radio?
No, not in sports talk radio. In radio, yes, not sports talk. He knew nothing about sports. Still doesn't. But the thing that I knew he would be something different was because he was left-handed. And he came at everything from the wrong side of everything. You know, when I walked in the room one evening, and he and his sister, he was about five, she was about two, and he hit her. And so I thought, this is a perfect time for my golden rule sermon. So I told him, you know, do unto others who you'd have them do unto you and all that stuff. And he said, I did. I said, you did what? He said, I did the golden rule. I said, how did you do that? He said, she hit me first, so I assumed she wanted me to hit her back. And I knew that I was out of my element. And for the rest of my life, I never preached on the golden rule because I wasn't quite sure if I had it right or not. He had so messed up my theology that it was never the same. So he could come at things in a different way. But for him to do it in the sports genre, I can never put him doing it. My oldest son, yes. But him, no.
So you said radio, yes. So you could always see that he had a little entertainer in him. Because George and I feel like he's meant to be in community theater, that's his true love, even though he denies it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything where there's a crowd. Mm-hmm. Because he said one day on the radio, one of the benefits of listening to your son on the radio is you pick up things about their past that you never realized and how much their past meant to him. And I always wonder why he was always in another world in high school. And he said on your program one day, he said, I always viewed high school as a stage upon which to perform. And suddenly the light flashed for me because that was it. That was the story. That's exactly what it was. And he was always that way. Wherever there was a crowd, he was there to perform. And that's the way he viewed himself.
So what kind of a little kid was he?
A little kid. I mean, he was always smaller than the other kids, but just the most charming and delightful. He could sell a necktie to a priest. He was just the smoothest kid you've ever seen, but you could never trust it. You never knew where he was going with it, what he was going to do with it. One summer, we were going up to Washington, D.C. I was supposed to pray before the House of Representatives up there, so we decided to make it a family project. And so he had been unusually incorrigible on this trip. I mean, he was destroying the back seat with his older brother and younger sister. And we came into Stanton, Virginia, which is the home of the Statler brothers and Woodrow Wilson. And that's where Woodrow Wilson was born. So we went by the Presbyterian manse where he was born. And I decided that I would use this as an object lesson for him. So I grabbed him by the hand to keep him from destroying the house, and we went up to this beautiful, huge, white preacher's manse. And as we walked up, I said, son, do you see how well some preacher's kids turn out? And I mean, without missing a beat, he looked up and he said, but Dad, you see how well some preacher's kids start off. I mean, wiped my argument out. We got back in the car. I went to Washington. I never said another word to him. So that was him all the way.
Same kind of personality as he grew and grew into his teenage years?
Yeah. It just got worse. You know, when he was younger, he realized that he could make his way through. But as he got older, he realized he could control the environment by doing it because it did become his stage, and he could manipulate a crowd by doing it.
Do you have one specific favorite father-son memory?
Oh, as far as a memory, for a number of years, he had wanted the two of us to go do something. Let's just go somewhere together. And he loves to go to Europe and places like that. So he wanted me to go to Italy with him. And I was interested in Italy, but I was much more interested in Scotland, which is our family home. So he took me to Scotland. And for 2 weeks, he and I rented a car, and we just drove all over Scotland and England and just were together and separate. And it was probably the most meaningful time of my life, and probably was in his too in some ways. Because, I mean, we would debate theology and philosophy, and we would get into historical activities that went in different places, and he would be making his comments about the history of those places. It just was such a bonding moment for both of us that I will never forget it. And every year, beginning on July the 1st, I'll take out the journal that I wrote while we were there and just read everything we did, everything we ate. I got to eat things that I've never thought people would eat before. As you know, when he goes into a place, he'll order three or four things, sample all of them, and then give you what he doesn't like. Right. And that's what all I got to eat.
You know, that's a great memory for you, but sadly, I asked him about that trip the other day, and he said he had no recollection of it.
Well, he wouldn't. He was drunk the whole time. But, you know, no, had it not been for him, we would have never made it because he drove the car.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever driven over there with the steering wheel on the other side, that was so disconcerting to me that I was always confused the whole time I was in the car as a passenger. And so he was good to me.
Is it awkward for you, a respected reverend, a doctor of theology, to have a son whose nickname is the devil's own?
No, at least he's identified with something spiritual. And so I'll take that over nothing anytime. But, you know, I know his heart. I know what's inside of him. I know the depth that he has. And I can tell that a lot of it is just surface stuff that he's doing. He's playing the part. But he is not that way at all when you're with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I have had some of the most profound moments together spiritually and theologically that I've had with anybody. And so I just appreciate who he is and what he really is on the inside.
And for those who might not know, the Right Reverend Keith presided over my wedding 8 years ago. And we're still together. It's been really shaky.
Longest I've ever done.
well, you did something good because we're hanging in.
Average on mine. So y'all are breaking all my rules. What did I do right?
I have no idea. But thank you.
Okay. By the way, did you go to George's wedding?
Yes, I did.
Okay. That ruins my argument then.
What's that?
Well, I was going to say that between George, you, Gordo, and me, all four of us were at his wedding. All four of us were at your wedding.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know if any of us went to his wedding. So I wasn't sure if he was honest and honorable and legitimate or not.
Yes, I was a witness there. So you can testify to that. Yeah.
Well, I was going to propose that we do his wedding over again, that I would preside, and that maybe we'd get Marge to sing and Ribby to be the best man and Jesse to handle the ushers, and maybe Clarence can do some wassail and some Rice Krispie squares, and we could do it at ticket stock. And so no need for that now. I thought I was going to have one more honorarium coming in.
Oh, that would be great. All right, I'll bounce it off George.
Suggest it anyway. Okay.
Oh, man.
Man, he is a character.
He's great.
Wow.
So wow. What do you think of that idea, George? You want to renew your vows at ticket stock?
I would do that with the Reverend Keith, but not with the great Gordo in the house, no.
You know, and then we went out to lunch afterwards, and we look forward to this every year because he's so great to visit with, and we could spend hours talking to him. And we got into his playing days back at Mississippi State. He was a football player in college, and he told me a bit of trivia that I did not know. His freshman team, the first game they ever played was against Alabama, against the Alabama freshman, and the Alabama quarterback was Joe Namath.
Wow.
And he believes that he is the first guy to ever tackle Joe Namath in college football.
Really?
Yeah, because he sacked him or something or tackled him on a run early in the game. Wow. So that's a little bit of trivia.
There you go.
Dang.
Now, your dad's he's a neat man. I think one of the really cool things about that is when I first got to know you, I said, man, how does this work? Because his dad is, you know, a former pastor, and how does this whole thing work? But as you heard in that interview, he lets you be you. As you said, I think in print, once you never really told him how to write a sermon, and he's never really told you how to do radio.
Yeah.
which I think is pretty cool.
People always, you know, wonder if my dad was like a footloose preacher dad, you know, Bible mm-hmm. thumper at home, and he never was that way. He never pressured us or was hard on us. He really did kind of let us find our own way. And I'm very glad that he did, because I think that if I had had a real authoritarian type father, you know, that I would still be rebelling today. But, you know, it's like I kind of found my way around that. And
you had a lot of Gil Santos moments if you had a dad like that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm really appreciative, and that was a good interview. That was good to listen to that.
Well, it's always fun to spend time with the Right Reverend Keith. All right, 8:30.